Blog Talk Radio.
This land is mine. God gave this land to me. This brave and nascent land to me. And when the morning sun reveals her hills and plains, then I see a land where children can run free. So take my hand and walk this land with me, and walk this lovely land with me. Though I'm just a man, when you are by my side, with the help of God, I know I can be strong.
Well, good evening. Happy Shabbat to one and all. We're here with Kirk and JB. And Kirk, as we were leading up to the show, you had a story about maps in San Francisco that are a tale for our time. And then I want to share something I read in the newspaper a couple of days ago. What did your friend find, or what was your friend given when they wanted to walk around San Francisco?
Well, one of my students took his grandson to an art museum in San Francisco, and when they got there, they were issued a particular map, which will tell you what areas to avoid. He called it a poop zone map, because it tells you how to avoid the human waste. It's so widespread in so much of the area, I guess, near the museums in particular, that the solution to the problem was that the city would issue you a map so you could avoid walking too near the waste. And I thought to myself, well, now that's a solution that I would have never occurred to me for the problem, but who am I?
So these are vagrants and homeless people in San Francisco, which has a real liberal approach to, you want to be homeless, so we'll take anybody here. And mm-hmm. they are doing something which is a crime.
Yes.
To defecate in a public place is a crime in every society. It's been a crime in every society probably back 3,000 years, because guess what is in human waste?
Every disease.
Yeah, bacteria and disease.
All sorts of things that aren't good for anybody.
Right. So San Francisco hasn't figured that out, that this is not healthy on the people that are not defecating on the street. This is not healthy on the people that are civilized. So we're going to continue to allow the uncivilized because, well, we don't really care about the others. It kind of gets back to the point that I've made so many times. If you don't know what to dislike, then the solution is never liking enough. You know, I've said that if you don't know what to hate, then love is not the answer.
Mm-hmm.
There are things that are harmful to good and moral people. Rape, yeah, well. Pedophilia, abuse, murder, deceit. And you ought to be disgusted by those things because they're harmful to people, and you ought to hate them. This is a case that being tolerant is actually being intolerant of the rights of healthy, normal people. But because of political correctness, they've lost the ability to see how their sense of tolerance is actually counterproductive. It's harmful to people who are doing the right thing. And it also is, you know, it's amazing that, A, they can't figure out that if they're pooping on the street, they're less disciplined than a dog that at least go to a place in the grass and the dog's owner that will pick it up in a bag and throw it away. And why not distribute bags? Why not put porta potties in those places? Why not provide housing if you want to be so bleeding heart liberal? Why not do any of those things?
Well, you know, London had that problem hundreds of years ago, and they invented, or they took the ideas from Paris, and they built the sewer system. And that's where, and then Italy, cholera disappeared from the map. What happened to that kind of concept? I mean, it's, that's what we do when we have disease. We fix the problem. We don't...
And the disease here is of the mind, an inability to be reasonable, an inability to be moral, an inability to think. I said a long time ago and repeated it many times. The biggest problem with people today is that with political correctness, socialist secular humanism, they've lost the ability to exercise good judgment. If you are not discriminating, if you're not discerning, if you do not exercise good judgment, you can't be moral. You can't be right. You can't be just. You can't be fair. Almost, you can't be rational. You can't be logical. So they've lost the ability to think because of this disease of the mind called political correctness, where that which is invalid is accepted and that which is valid is rejected. It's a tragedy. Now, the newspaper story that I read was just so interesting. The head of the CIA is being nominated to be Secretary of State. And the person that is being nominated to be the head of the CIA, these two individuals have something in common, and it's a really bad thing. Have you guys read anything about what these two nominees for Secretary of State and the head of the CIA have in common?
No.
No.
They advocated and orchestrated the Bush administration's policy of torture.
Okay.
That's what they did. That's what they did. Now, what's even worse about them orchestrating this policy of torture, which is morally bankrupt, it is, you know, it is about as heinous as anything a person can do. I mean, it's one of the reasons I despise the Roman Catholic Church so much is for 1,000 years they invented and employed the most sadistic torture devices ever known to humankind. How anyone in their right mind can be a Roman Catholic knowing the devices that they invented and employed to torture people and to have done so countless times over 1,000 years or more ought to cause any moral and rational person to reject Roman Catholicism if the leadership can be that corrupt that long and inflict that kind of pain. Well, these two buffoons both decided that torture would be a really good idea, and if you're think that torture is a good idea and you want to orchestrate it, you are a sick and perverted individual. You are as hideous as anyone alive. And they not only did it, they're proud of it. And when the Congress, somebody in Congress says, you know, we really should have an investigation as to who orchestrated this. And of course, it was George Bush and Condoleezza Rice and Dick Cheney were at the inventors of the idea and these and in league with these two CIA leaders. When Congress, some in Congress says we should investigate this, you know what these two individuals told Congress? That would be the epitome of hypocrisy. Because Congress was briefed in advance of this strategy to torture, and that they approved it. So the problem in America is the reason you can't indict, convict, and jail George Bush, Cheney, Condoleezza Rice, and all of those in the CIA and the Justice Department who were complicit in issuing the order to torture individuals is because the entire system is run by corrupt people. And there are no uncorrupt people to hold them accountable. That is the answer from the CIA. You can't judge us because you're as corrupt as we are.
Well, everybody does it.
You know, it's a true statement.
Well, no, everybody doesn't do it. You know, there are those that still implement torture. Most of it is perpetrated today by Muslims. But the United States decided we would go to the lowest common denominator and that we too would torture. And you know, if you ask the average patriot on the street, you know, what's your opinion on torture? You know what they'll tell you? You know, yeah, they'll agree to it. I don't think anything's wrong with it.
Oh yeah,
they're the bad guys. It's okay.
Save the life.
No, you want to find the bad guy? Look in the mirror. You're the bad guy. The system has become so corrupt that there is no one good in the system anymore. And the reason that the system is corrupt without anybody good in the system is because the people voting within that system are as corrupt as their leaders. It's one of the reasons that God begins his one and only ode to America with, "Oi, warning, alas, be prepared for what's going to come. You have been warned." All right, well, there is an answer. The answer is not found in politics. The answer is not found in the military. The answer is not found in patriotism. The answer is not found in political correctness. The answer is found in the Torah. In the opening page of the pages of the Torah, the book of Bereshit, is where we have been studying everything that can be known about the covenant. And we've learned a number of things about it. One is that Yahweh had a covenant relationship with Adam. And so that Adam might more fully understand the concept of a family, which is that's the covenant is. It's a family with Yahweh as father and us as his children. Yahweh actually gave to Adam the one thing that would enable him to experience family and to understand it far better than even words might express it to him. What was he given that would help him appreciate family?
Osama.
Yeah, Chawa. Oh, he had an Osama. That gave him the ability to think. That's a good thing. But no, he was given Chawa. That's what he was given. Remember, Yahweh used a word that I'm going to give you a Chawa to help you. Well, to help you what? There wasn't any work at the time. Help him what? He didn't need help. You know, he was living in paradise, man.
Yeah.
Why does one need help in paradise? Help for what? It never dawned on me until we were just talking about it right now. In fact, I had never thought about this aspect of it. I always realized that there was the primary reason that Yahweh gave, and he explained it to Chawa, to Adam, is that if God is the only choice, it really isn't a choice. Man is created as a social being. Man cannot handle isolation. Man goes crazy, insane in isolation. And if the only way to resolve that is Yahweh, then you really don't have a choice, do you? So the only way that humankind could actually be given a choice between the family of man and the family of God is for God to enable us to have a family of man. Shalom. I've never taken it to the next step, though, as to what it is that Yahweh did through Chawa that was really helpful to Adam until this very moment. But what he did that was helpful to Adam is he gave him the ability to experience love, family, childbirth, child rearing, the whole concept of home. That's the essence of the covenant. And, you know, he even was able to see children, his children, Cain and Abel, could make good and bad choices, right and wrong choices. Abel made a right choice. Cain made a wrong choice. And he got to see the consequences of those right and wrong choices. And it's just an amazing demonstration of covenant and what would happen later with Yehuda and Yisrael. But, you know, it goes beyond that, of course, because every aspect of the story of Noah, is a covenant. But Yahweh actually explains that this was the sign of the covenant at the end of his discussions with Noah, and gave the seven color rainbow. 6 plus 1 with green in the middle. Growth. Life. In the midst of it as the sign of it. And every aspect of it was the same, which is that the thing that caused Noah to even be considered for this covenant was that he had walked away from the family of man. And the second aspect is that he listened to and understood and relied upon Yahweh. He considered every term and condition that Yahweh delineated for the purpose of building that ark. And he did, acted upon what Yahweh said. Didn't change it, didn't negotiate with him. Listened to him and acted accordingly. As such, we have a demonstration of the covenant, right, with Noah. And then here we have Abraham, and no one wants to appreciate the fact that the first thing we learn about Abraham is where he left. In fact, in the English translations, they managed to have where Abraham left in the previous chapter. They don't even tie it to the opening dialogue, as if it's not even related. But he walked out of Babel. And oh, by the way, he was a goy. You know, I got an email today from Jackie, and it was short and sweet. It was just really interesting. She was responding to something I said in the last program, which is, you know, I got my DNA test back, and the DNA test said that, you know, I'm not a Yahudi. I'm not from any of the tribes of Israel. I am most certainly goy, and it's really what I expected all along. And she was saying, you know, it really is interesting. She says, you know, Choder is one of those few Hebrew words that does not have a verbal root. It's separate in that way. And she wanted to say, you know, what is also interesting is that Yahweh revealed his message exclusively through Yisrael and Yehuda. And yet, Yisrael and Yehuda have collectively chosen, Israelites and Jews, have collectively chosen to wholly disregard what he said. In fact, they don't understand what he said, because they're so confused by the poison that has been placed on top of Yahweh's Torah, covering it up, which is the rabbinical Talmud. Here you have Yisrael and Yehuda, just as the book of prophet Yeshayah was told, that their ears will be closed, their eyes will be closed, and they will not understand. And so that Yahweh would pick, of all things, a goy to inspire, not directly, but indirectly, through the words of that he had originally given to Yisrael and Yehuda. So that perhaps more and more Israelites and Yahudim might understand what God had originally shared with them. You know, that's the sign. The sign doesn't point to me. You know, the sign doesn't point to Captain Kirk. The sign points to Dod, to Yeshayah, to the words that Yahweh conveyed through Moshe, to the story of Adam, to the story of Noah, to the story of Abraham. That's where the sign points. Read them. Understand them. Act upon them. So, here we are. We have the single most important story ever conveyed to humankind, and almost no one seems to care about it. I don't think, Kirk, until we were studying this, had anybody ever... Now, it's a long time now. This was written 3,500 years ago. That's a long time. I don't think anyone in 3,500 years has even bothered to say, all right, let's break this story down. Every detail was given to us for a reason. What did Yahweh ask Abraham to do? What did Yahweh offer to Abraham if he did these things? And come out and to find out that just as there are five hands in Yahweh's name, as there are five fingers on our hands, just as we have two sets of hands, there are five benefits of the covenant, and there are five terms and conditions of the covenant.
Yeah.
And we, I think we're the first in 3,500 years to say, here are the five conditions of the covenant, and here are the five benefits. Oh, and by the way, please, do not act on any one of the five terms and conditions of the covenant until you've come to know, taken enough time to know who Yahweh is, what he is asking of us, what he is offering to us, how he is enabling all of this, and where he is offering to come. You need to study the story of Adam and the garden, because that's where he's taking us. You need to understand what transpired there. No religion, no politics, no patriotism, no corruption, no lies.
No religion.
No religion, just time with Yahweh. That's where he's offering to take us. Do you want to go there? Do you want to do what he did with Adam? You know, the most endearing story is when Yahweh says that he sat down with Adam and had all of the various animals, the most interesting life forms, walk by. And he allowed Adam to name them. What a fun thing to do. What a marvelous thing to do. If that doesn't appeal to you and you don't want to spend your eternity with the creator of the universe explaining creation and sharing it with you, you probably don't want to go there. And if you want to bow down and pray and sing these kind of songs, you know, religious songs, you don't want to go there. If you want to salute the flag, you don't want to go there. If you think heroes are those who die in the military, you don't want to go there. If you think that being part of a religion is going to endear you to God, you don't want to go there. So, that's first and foremost. You need to understand where he is offering to take us. And then the next thing you really need to understand, you've got to understand the story of Noah. That God's not looking, you know, there wasn't a whole lot of yibber-yabber coming out of Noah's mouth, was there, in that story? You hear Noah say, oh, God, I'm getting down on my knees. Could you please make, I'm looking for some good weather. Oh, could you please enrich my family so that we win the lottery so I can get some slaves to build this daggone boat of yours?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, you know, my wife, she's got the Crankosaurus. Could you heal her of the Crankosaurus? You know, I was listening to, these last couple of days has been deaths that have been fairly popular and in the news. And one of a really famous athlete says, you know, the man upstairs doesn't make any mistakes, so I'm sure there was a reason that he took Popovich, as he's the coach of San Antonio Spurs. I'm sure there's a reason that he took Popovich's wife. I just don't understand it, but he doesn't make any mistakes. And you're thinking about it. Oh, my God. A capricious God that would make a decision to kill a woman. And that couldn't be a mistake. That he did it, but we don't know why. You need to understand the story of Noah is a story of listening to what Yahweh has to say and acting upon it, doing what he asks, the story of the covenant, engaging with Yahweh after you've listened to what he has said, acting upon what he has conveyed as instructions. And if you do, salvation awaits. So, it's it's only within that context that you'd even approach this whole story. So here's the passage that we ended with yesterday, Kirk. It reads, so then God said to Abraham, so as for you, you should continually examine and genuinely consider my family covenant relationship. In addition, so should the offspring you conceive following you to approach throughout their generations. So if God said to Abraham, as for you, you should continually examine and genuinely consider Shamar. You should observe my family covenant relationship. Do you think maybe it's a good idea that we do the same?
Yes, indeed.
Do you think that God cut a deal for Abraham that he's not offering to anyone else?
It's inconceivable.
Do you think that what God asked of Abraham and offered Abraham, he wouldn't give us the same benefits if we responded in the same way?
Of course he would. How could he not?
If he would not, would he be someone you'd ever want to spend any time with?
No, sir.
He'd go back to that capricious God, wouldn't he?
Mm-hmm.
Unpredictable. You don't know how he's going to respond. And, by the way, if that was the case, if it was, no, this is the deal for Abraham and nobody else, so don't pay attention to it, why did he bother to tell it to us?
Well, that's what Paul said, you know.
and then just in case
you
were too dense to figure out that a God that is capable of creating the universe and life within it, and a God capable of creating, conceiving this family and the means for us to be part of it eternally, if you can't figure out that God is going to be consistent and trustworthy, and if your wee little mind can't wrap your brain around that concept, and therefore, what he said to Abraham applies to you and me. And if your wee little brain is so twisted by religion that you can't process that, what does it say after God tells Abraham that you should observe my family covenant relationship?
To teach to your children.
Yeah, in addition, so should the offspring you conceive. I mean, it's just for us too. Oh, you say, oh, but, you know, I'm not a direct descendant of Abraham and Sarah. Well, you know, last time I checked, Abraham had a couple of sons, didn't he? Yeah. And the second son had a dad that was a goy, because, by the way, Abraham was a goy, and had a mom who was an Egyptian slave girl. That would be a goy, and he was a goy. So there you go. Yishak became the grandfather, if you will, of Yisrael. But Yishak, nah, it's just goys.
Yeah.
Yep, so there we are. And your offspring after you. In fact, he didn't say, and the one child after you, did he?
No.
Nor did he say just the two children after you. Because the fact is that if a goy chooses to participate in the covenant, you can.
Yeah.
Only one Torah, one covenant. Yeah.
Yeah. Same promise, same.
So, in addition to the offspring you conceive after you, Akar, Ata, La Dorim Hem, to approach throughout their generations, to draw near and reach the goal, no matter when or where you live, not even regardless of a period of time. So there's one story, one covenant, one path for all people, for all time, in all places. You can't get any more clear than that. There's no argument here. And he's not saying, hey, now this one here is only until Jebus arrives and the Roman Catholic Church creates a religion by mixing together all of the previous religions, the Greek religion, the Roman religion, the Babylonian religion, and they claim to be the vicars of Christ on earth. And Paul writes these miserable, profane letters. And at that point, everything I said here is for naught. and we're going to have a whole new testament, a new covenant. Well, the problem with that would be, in addition, so should your offspring after you, following you, to approach throughout their generations for all time and all places. Well, that's pretty straightforward, and it sure as hell eliminates any concept or any possibility of a New Testament, a new covenant, or a Christian church, doesn't it?
You're really down to that. You're in the corner. Either God's lying or man's lying.
I mean, right.
As you can do it.
Yeah. Either God's wrong or religion's wrong.
Mm-hmm.
Those are your choices. God's wrong or religion's wrong. Well, religion can't be right if God's wrong. And since religion is the antithesis of what God said, every one of them is the antithesis of what God says, it is rationally impossible for any religion to be true.
Lose, lose, lose.
It is lose, lose. All right. This is a fairly long statement. It's Bereshit, Genesis 17:10. There's a lot here. And before we just say it, I just want to reinforce the fact that what God is saying here, he's repeating. He is repeating what is the fourth term and condition of the covenant, and then he's going to state the fifth. And he's reinforcing, he gave us the fourth, which is to closely examine and carefully consider the terms and conditions of my covenant relationship, the previous one. He is now repeating that before he speaks of the fifth, which is to circumcise your sons. And the reason is circumcising your sons without outside of the context of knowing and understanding its purpose within the covenant is just a waste of time. It's just like observing Pesach without knowing what it represents. It's a waste of time. In fact, it's counterproductive. This specific Zoth, this one and only singular entity being discussed, this is a demonstrative singular feminine pronoun from Zeth. You know what Zeth means? I just thought that this was really interesting. Zoth is, it just means this specific, this one and only. But you know the root of Zoth?
Zeth or Zen or what is it?
It's Zeth. And what Zeth means in Hebrew? Lamb. Sheep. You know, he's going to get his clues in there. So this specific, this one and only, family covenant of mine. Bereth is a feminine noun, and so the demonstrative pronoun had to be feminine as well. From Yahweh's point of view, home is and family is feminine. The covenant is feminine because the covenant and family home are a product of the set-apart spirit, our spiritual mother, and she is feminine. Torah, by the way, is also a feminine noun. There's so many aspects of Yahweh's message and nature. And the single most important thing that Yahweh wants, which is us to be part of his Bereth covenant, is feminine. All right. So this specific Bereth Ani, familial covenant family relationship of mine. Whoops, you know, I'm going to stop again because Annie, following Bereth, explains something that 99.999% of people do not know. If you were to talk to most people and you were to speak of the message that is conveyed in what they call the Old Testament, which would convey the Old Covenant, where would they say? They would say that covenant is the covenant that God created with whom?
With the Jews.
The Jews.
Right, the Jews. Does this here say that the covenant is with Yisrael or Yehuda?
Nope.
Does it say this is the religious covenant? Yeah, regarding the law, and then I'm going to have a Christian religious covenant that is about grace. Is there any mention of that?
No.
So, whose covenant family is it?
It is.
Yahweh.
Yahweh. So if you don't like this covenant, like, didn't Paul say in Galatians that the covenant that was revealed on Sinai, which would be the covenant as it's as we're reading it here in the Torah, that this covenant enslaved?
Yeah.
He did indeed.
Point blank. He said in Galatians that the covenant that's revealed on Sinai enslaves. Whose covenant was revealed on Sinai?
Yahweh's.
That is correct. Does Yahweh say, you know, because Paul's argument was it was with Hagar. Well, does Yahweh say that Hagar's child is part of the covenant?
No, he says absolutely
no. Yeah, and does he say here that this covenant is with either Hagar or Ishmael?
No.
Nope.
Does he even ascribe the covenant to Abraham and Isaac here?
Not yet. No.
No. So whose covenant is it?
He hasn't accepted it yet.
So it's Yahweh's covenant. And for Christianity to have as its centerpiece the letters of Paul, with Paul specifically saying in his first letter, the letter to the Galatians, that the covenant in this Torah enslaves, that would make Yahweh, the creator God of the universe, a man, an individual whose purpose was to enslave and make him a slave driver.
Yeah.
You know, I remember reading a story in the next book of the Torah. It's about the Mitzrayim, the place of the crucibles of human oppression, where Yahweh says, I've heard the cry of my people because of their taskmasters, those who are enslaving them. And in that story, Yahweh says, let my people go.
Yeah.
Let them go. I don't want you to keep them as slaves anymore. So, in the central story here of Yahweh's relationship with his people, is he the slave driver, or is he the liberator?
He's the liberator, the freedom
liberator.
Yeah. So, how in the hell can this covenant be twisted into something that enslaves when Yahweh's specific role was to liberate his children from slavery? Yeah. Have you guys ever read the Ten Statements of the Eye Etched in Stone?
Yeah.
Many times.
What does the first one say beyond the Yahweh introducing himself by name and saying that you will exist with no other gods in my presence? Is there a little in the midst of the first statement of the Etched in Stone about his role in this regard?
Yes, that's that he freed them and liberated them from the crucible of Egypt.
I am Yahweh, your God, who liberated you from slavery in Mitzrayim. So here's the first statement that Yahweh etched in stone. And these morons that want to have their Ten Commandments up in city halls haven't figured that out. That he's presenting himself as, first of all, by the name Yahweh, none of which they know, none of whom they know that name, that Yahweh, that rather than being an enslaver, he's introducing himself as, oh, by the way, I am your liberator, the one who freed you from slavery. So they can't figure out that when Paul wrote that the Torah's covenant enslaves, that Paul was therefore a bold-faced liar, the most evil man who ever lived. And yet, they think Paul's letters are scripture. How stupid can you be? That you got your 10 statements in stone that you want to put in the court square, and you treat Paul's letters that say, this covenant enslaves, in the middle of the book that you haul around with you and call it scripture, when it says exactly the opposite. Study, huh? Okay, so it's
think of how Paul meets his God. I mean, versus how God calls everyone to give choice, freedom, free will choice.
His God blinds him, makes him lame, cripples him, And his god quotes Dionysus. It's difficult to kick against the god. Yeah.
It doesn't take a genius to realize that these ain't the same people.
No. Not the same individual. So this specific family covenant relationship of mine, Asher. Yeah, my favorite word. Asher.
Your key word.
It is. You know, Asher can be just translated witch. But the primary meaning of Asher is to beneficially mark the way to a relationship, to show the way to this fortunate and joyful place that is found by walking the correct path, thereby revealing the steps which lead to life. Oh, I so wish 15 years ago that when I was trying to make sense of that prophecy that was wrong in every English Bible translations, when they all said, when he sins, or if he sins, I will not spare the punishment. And I'm saying, well, if that's true, then Christianity and the religion that I had trusted for so many years is indeed a hoax. Because if he sins, or when he sins, and God punishes him, he would be punishing him for his sins, not ours.
His sin.
He could not be the perfect Passover lamb. So somebody really screwed up here. And they all screwed up because they all copied each other's mistake. And then I found that the word that they translated if or when was Asher. And then I found out what Asher is. It's a relational pronoun which associates things. So, therefore, when sin is associated with him, if sin is associated with him, I will not spare the punishment. And all of a sudden now, it's a consistent story throughout.
Makes sense.
Right. The lamb, perfect lamb, Passover lamb, was given our sin. Our sin was laid upon him. Perfect. Well, at that time, I was just using a Strong's concordance, and therefore I looked at the back, and you know, I saw this Asher, and that's the first Asher that it pointed to. I didn't look any further. You know, it took me a long while before I began to say, well, what else does Asher mean? And Kirk, have you ever, or JB, have you ever done this? Well, you look at Asher, and you find out that if you don't just stop at the first one, but instead look at, because there's like six Hebrew words that are vocalized differently but are written exactly the same as Asher.
Mm-hmm.
And they all have an interesting and related meaning. They speak of walking a correct and narrow path. They speak of receiving a benefit. They speak of relationships. They speak of something that marks the way. They speak of that which is fortunate and joyful. They speak of a specific and correct path. They speak of steps which lead to life. You know, almost every place that you see Asher, at least in all the important places, almost all aspects of Asher apply. And it becomes not just a word that led me to Yahweh. It becomes the word that leads all of us to him. This specific familial covenant of mine, which beneficially marks the way to the relationship, which shows the way to this fortunate and joyful place that is found by walking the correct way, thereby revealing the steps which lead to life. All of that applies.
Mm-hmm.
Oh. You ever just wallowed in Asher before, Kirk? I know you like letters.
Yeah, I did. I wish I had my notes on this one. For the baby yesterday out there. Most of these do that, and it's quite exciting because you go down and they'll say, well, that applies to this, that applies to that, that applies to that, that applies to that.
I would encourage everyone who's listening, and you know, don't just use Strong's.
No.
There are so many Hebrew lexicons and dictionaries. Use them all, and so many of them are available free online, and many, of course, have now Lagos, and others have other tools that they have purchased for this. Don't do what I did for so long, which is look up the first definition and write it down. Linger a while. Look at the other words which are written using the same letters. And Asher is a real treat. It is one of the it's an extreme reward when you consider what Asher means. And it's not just because the word is so perfectly Yahweh. The word just incorporates everything that is Yahweh. You know, beneficially marks the way to the relationship. Right. Beneficially marks the way to the relationship, which show the way to this fortunate and joyful place that is found by walking the correct way, thereby revealing the steps which lead to life. Okay, that's powerful. But then think of all of the places Asher is used. You know, there are very few important statements regarding being part of the covenant or walking to Yahweh and becoming perfected by Him don't include Asher. Almost every important message that Yahweh conveys includes Asher in that description. So it's not just that the word is compelling. It's that the word is found right in the heart of almost every important message that Yahweh conveys. It's everywhere.
Yeah.
Now,
there's about three pages in. I just had to stop for a minute and go grab a book. It's like, I got it. There's 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 columns. And Consensus Hebrew Chaldees Lexicon. My gosh.
Yep.
I'll have to go get that little ball up. I'll have to check those again.
Yep. Oh, it's a treat. This is one of the best words, most inspiring, insightful, enlightening words. I think inspiring is the right word here. Because it was something that Jackie said in her email to me when she said that, you know, he inspired Yisrael and Yehudim to write the Torah, Prophets, and Psalms, and he inspired you as you read what he had conveyed through them so that you could inspire his children today.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that's true.
Right. You can be inspired by studying these words. These words are inspiring. You don't need God to say, you know, Kirk, I don't think I communicated quite enough in the Torah, and my communication wasn't really as clear as it should have been. And, oh, by the way, you know, you're a Renaissance man in a new time, and what I said back then doesn't apply today, so I'm really hoping you can help me out with this and come up with a little update on my plan. So I'm going to inspire you with some fresh revelation that nobody else has heard. Could you please write this down for me? I don't think he's going to tell you that, Kirk.
No, I don't think so. If it does, no, I'll just shoot you.
And if you come out tomorrow and say, oh, by the way, this is what he told me, I might put you out of your misery. The fact is, if you want inspiration, observe his words. Closely examine and carefully consider his words, and you will find words like Asher inspiring. But, you know, there's another word that I think you'll find inspiring because, you know, we talked about, we spent a whole program on bien last week. Bien is amongst my favorite words, and it means to make connections between the things that you know so that you come to understand. So I like that term a lot. There's another term I like. It's the verb in the sentence. What's the verb in the sentence? It's you should continuously observe, closely and literally examining, while carefully considering. What's the verb?
Shamar.
Shamar is the verb. It means to focus on.
It even looks pretty
to look at
in the language. In the letters.
Yeah, go ahead. Go through the letters.
It's a ASH, you know, and that's the teeth. And you have a M, which is...
And what does ASH, the teeth, convey before we...
Well, it's nourishing words, nourishing food, nourishing, all the metaphors for nourishing.
Right. Yeah,
words
word come out of our mouth.
Yeah,
right.
Of course.
And the SH isn't just about speech, the words that come out of our mouth. The teeth are used to chew, therefore it's nourishing words. And also, it's the incisors that are shown They cut, don't they?
Yes, they cut and separate.
Right. And that's what these are words that are nourishing, which cut and separate. That's the first letter. That's a pretty good letter.
Mm-hmm. And then, Shamar, you'd have a M or a Mim.
Yeah, Mim.
Which is what we use for the first one we think of as water, or cleansing. And we also use it for the spirit.
Cleansing and the spirit are two of the three key attributes of Mim. Cleansing, because water is the universal solvent. It's used to cleanse. And the spirit is always associated with water because of her cleansing power. But there's another reason the spirit is associated with water. What came out of water in the creation story?
Life.
When the scientists look for life on other planets, which is the first thing that they have to find for there to be any chance? Yeah, liquid water, or there is no life.
Really excited when you see water.
Right. So, Mim is the source of life and the source of cleansing, both of which come from the spirit, and that's why the spirit is associated with life. So, that's the message of the Mim. So, we have cutting and dividing, nourishing words about the source of life and cleansing. That's the first two letters.
Pretty good so far, yeah. And we have a
Pretty good. There's only one more letter. There's only one letter left.
Yeah.
What is that letter? Give me a...
Give you a Resh.
Can you give me a Rosh? Yeah, give me a Rosh. Okay, give me a
Rosh. If you want to go back
Okay, and what Rosh Resh doesn't really matter.
Yeah,
what,
exactly. God is true.
You know what's interesting? I know what Rosh and means. It means what it's drawn as, right? It means head. But you know what means more than head?
Yes, it's observant.
The first word in the Torah is Barashith. It's got Rosh in the middle of it.
Yes.
It means first, in the beginning,
first.
Most importantly, and the order of things begin here.
Yes, true.
So the Rosh beyond, and you're going to talk about what that head symbolizes, but the Rosh is going to tell us, first and foremost, the biggest priority you have, the thing you should do first of all, beyond everything else, is to pay attention to those nourishing words which are help to separate
them.
Because they are
the source of
cleansing.
Yeah. When you draw a head, you've got ears to hear, Shema.
Uh-huh.
You've got eyes to see, to read with.
Yep.
You engage the senses. You have a brain in there to make judgments. You have an asoma. So he's asking you to observe it, to study it, and to respond to it, too.
Yes,
and,
interesting.
That's why you always
the Rosh, which is a picture of a head.
Mm-hmm.
Does it have feet and hands?
No, not in this picture.
No. It doesn't have feet and hands, does it? So if it doesn't have feet and hands, then it can't be addressing a do thing, can it? This is not an action. This is not worshiping. It's not bowing down in prayer. It's not following a bunch of laws. It can't be keep, can it?
No, it cannot be keep.
It cannot be keep. Because there is no hand, there is no foot here. This is simply listen and observe, because it is ears, eyes, and a brain.
Judge, discern.
Yes. Okay, and can you tell for our listeners here, Kirk, which direction is the head facing in that word?
All these letters are going towards the left, or neutral of left to the left. But the head has chosen a direction to go from right to left, which is the path that Yahweh has chosen get home.
All right.
So
there you are. That is Shamar.
You ain't gonna come up with a different answer.
Shamar. Right.
Yeah.
That is Shamar. That's what the letters say. And when you study Shamar, other than the lexicons trying to justify existing translations with keep, which they infer from the context means obey.
Yeah.
You know. keep. You better keep my commandments, which they mean obey. And that's not what God's saying at all. In fact, is there even a Hebrew word for obey?
No.
No, there isn't.
No. Nothing close.
Not anywhere close. Won't find anything anywhere close to it. So this keep, and by the way, when you read obey in an English Bible, 100% of the time it is from the verb shama, which is related to shamar. And shama means to listen. It means you use your ears to hear. And shamar means use your eyes to see. It does not mean
well, most often it's used
obey.
With a volitional modifier, meaning you should want to do this.
Mm-hmm.
It should be your desire.
That's
to
true.
Do it. You can't obey a desire.
Correct. That is correct. But the word means here, it means that you should observe closely and literally examining while carefully considering. Shamar, focus upon, look at, pay attention to, beware of, learn about, and remember, care about, and cling to, retain for protection, diligently contemplate, and in great detail evaluate. Written with a call stem in the imperfect conjugation. Call stem means literally and genuinely developing a relationship between the subject and the object, in this case, humankind and God, on an ongoing and continual basis with implications that are enduring throughout the relationship. Wow. This specific one and only family covenant relationship of mine, which beneficially marks the way to the relationship and shows the path to this fortunate and joyful place, which is found by walking the correct way, you should continually observe, closely and literally examining, while carefully considering. Why? To be discerning and to make an intelligent connection to understand me. Being ani. To pay attention, being observant and diligently join things together in a rational and prudent way that leads to perceiving, properly regarding, and comprehending me. Me being Yahweh. And for you to be perceptive and prudent regarding the association. Wa bien ata, for you to make the appropriate connection after exercising good judgment. Yahweh wants us to be observant so that we can make the proper connections and understand. Hey, Kirk, if I give you a dot-to-dot puzzle and I want you to reveal the picture, and you're blind and you cannot see the dots, can you draw the picture?
No, not unless you do it in Braille.
Okay. So, Yahweh says, I'm giving you something to observe, to closely examine and carefully consider. I'm giving you the dots that you can connect so that you understand. Pretty straightforward, isn't it?
You know, I looked up something on Ben today, just a little while ago. And it was funny. I couldn't figure out why that was there. But it said, when you get to, it says to discern, and then the verb from being, is to understand in judgment and diligence through observation. And then I found the word skillful. And I said, well, that's kind of odd that they would use the word skillful. But then later, on several verses later, when we talk about circumcision, the foreskin is uncircumcised, and it's also known as unskilled. As a advocate for a human being.
Right.
That's really
funny. Uncircumcised means unskilled, and BN means skilled.
Skilled.
Yeah. When Dover was speaking of uncircumcised Philistine, what he was saying is that unskilled, that unthinking, that Philistine that lacks understanding, and speaking of Goliath, Philistine that lacks understanding. Right, uncircumcised. to not have the skill to comprehend. And that's, you know, I began this program today telling two stories. And both stories, you told one, Kirk, I told the other. Both stories point out the single biggest poison and disease of humankind. That because of political correctness, most humans have lost the ability to think. They don't have the skill necessary to understand. They're no longer discerning. They're no longer judgmental. They no longer make the kind of connections necessary to comprehend. Well, God is saying here, I gave you this family covenant and all the information here that he's relating to Abraham and through Abraham to us so that we might closely examine it, carefully consider it, and make the connections by being discerning and processing this intelligently so that we might understand not only Yahweh, but be perceptive and prudent regarding this association. Guys, you know, you could spend your life trying to make a fortune. You could spend your life trying to pursue the success of some human endeavor. And at the end of your life, you're going to shrivel up and die like everyone else. Whoop-de-doo. Right? Look at the great athletes of all time as they've gotten older. You know, they were the greatest boxer, Muhammad Ali. You know, he was all very braggadocious. I'm the greatest of all time. Did you see him in the last 20 years of his life? Yeah. Well, he got Parkinson's, but he lost the ability to talk, to think, to speak, to stand. So that's the way we go out of life. You can be the greatest of all time and pursue it and walk out of life crippled, lame, deaf, dumb. Or you can spend a little time coming to actually know what God said, examining these words as if your life depended upon them, looking up the nuances of each one, doing what we're doing. You know, this is an hour and a half, and we're going to get through a couple of statements in an hour and a half, dissecting each of these words as if your life depended on it, because guess what?
It does.
So why not? Anyone listening to this archive of this program, somebody, somehow you stumble on it. Hopefully you're a Yisraelite or Yehudim. Hopefully, if not, then you're a Gentile, a Goyim, Goy with an open mind who is willing to go where the truth leads. And you are inspired by these words, by Zoth, this one and only, Bereth, Ani, family covenant relationship of mine, Asher, which beneficially marks the way to the relationship. Shamar, you should continuously observe, closely and literally examine, while carefully considering. Bien Ani, so as to be discerning and to make intelligent connections to understand me. God is speaking. Wa bien ata, for you to be perceptive and prudent regarding the association. Take some time. Not only turn to, and this is the 10th chapter, 82nd page of Observations for Our Time. That's already made available, Kirk, on your site, which is...
No, JB site.
No, JB site, I'm sorry, JB site, which
yeah.
is YahwahBereth.com. YahwahBereth.com. Speaking of this very thing, YahwahBereth.com. Turn to the 10th chapter. Look at these words. Check them yourself. There's a gazillion free lexicons and dictionaries online. Validate that these translations of these words is accurate. You know, then, you know, you may even want to look up a Hebrew-English interlinear to verify that these are the words that are actually in the text. Then look up these words yourself. Verify that they are rendered correctly. And when they are, think about them. What is God saying here? I'm conveying a message through Abraham that I want you to observe because it marks the way to the relationship. And as a result, it empowers you to be discerning and make an intelligent connection so as to understand who God is and so that you can be perceptive and prudent regarding this relationship. Process the implications of that.
I was looking for the command to do this. It's not there.
No, there's no command. It's like everything. I'm going to lay it out there for you. I'm going to introduce you to me. I'm going to prove that I'm the creator of the universe, and through my testimony, I'm going to give you an eyewitness account of what occurred. I am then going to tell you specifically what I'm offering, what I'm asking in return. And I'm going to lay it all out for you. You can either choose it or ignore it. And if you ignore it, it's no problem. You'll have lived your life. I gave you free will. I gave you a conscience and a soma to exercise good judgment and to think about it, to be rational. I gave you my testimony for you to consider. And if you don't want to pay any attention to what I have said, you want to believe a religious mumbo jumbo, or you want to trust political man instead, you're an idiot. I don't want any part of you, but, you know, you live your life and your soul is simply...
And you're free to do it.
You're free to do it, but you aren't going to spend any time with me in heaven, nor is anybody else who's passed away before you that believed in the stupidity of religious lies or political lies. But be forewarned. If you're going to do what Paul did and contradict God and lead people astray, there's got to be a consequence for that, and there surely is. That place is called Sheol. Shares the same name as Paul, Shaul, and it is eternal separation from God and what is equivalent to a black hole. Now, this is the second part of that, what is now Bereshit 17:10. It should have been, it's two separate statements. They are related, but it never should have been one verse as it appears in English Bibles. These are... You process what he just said and now process what he's saying next. So, to form a thoughtful relationship and make a comprehensible connection between BN to consider the instruction. Your offspring following you, Zera Ata. So, your descendants, your children, posterity following you, Akar, Ata, should circumcise, mule, should cut off and remove the foreskin, warding off a deadly and debilitating curse by way of this oath, changing priorities while making a binding promise to undergo the benefits of circumcision. This was scribed with the Niphil stem, denoting the genuineness of this relationship while stressing the benefit accrued to the parent. Isn't that interesting? The person who does it. While it was written in the infinitive absolute, which intensifies the importance of the act, and the imperfect conjugation, which reveals that this instruction on circumcision will endure uninterrupted throughout time with ongoing benefits. Hebrew grammar is important, folks.
Mm-hmm.
Accordingly, your every male to help them remember their status. So we're going to look at two words here. The first is mul, but the second is zakar. You know, it's so interesting that Yahweh has lots of words for son, right? What's the primary words of son in Hebrew?
Ben.
Just bien, right? Ben. By the way, it's very similar to bien. Which is to understand, but Ben, son, B-N. And it's really interesting. son is comprised of two Hebrew letters. The first is the Beth, which is the family home, and N,
family.
Nun, is drawn in the form of a sperm.
Her.
Yeah. Life that emerges in a family and home. So, Ben is the primary word for son. Did he use Ben here? He used Zachar, didn't he?
Yes.
Is Zachar the primary word for son?
No.
No. So, for
it's actually relatively
Zachar and your sons. Pardon?
It's actually relatively uncommon.
Correct.
By comparison to Ben.
Well,
you know,
it is a common word.
One every 20.
Uncommon. Yeah. It's uncommon to be translated male.
Yeah.
It's a common word.
Oh, yeah. In terms of,
for example,
remember
the prophet David Zanabi? One of the most important prophets was Zachariah. So Zachar is a very common Hebrew word. It's just uncommonly translated male.
Used in this way.
That is correct. You are absolutely correct. So, what is the primary meaning of Zachar, since it's rendered frequently in Hebrew?
Remember.
Right. So what Yahweh used to describe who and would be the beneficiary of this circumcision is the Hebrew word for remember.
Mm-hmm.
So you're going to do this so you remember. So your male offspring remembers. So his wife will know, and she will remember. And then when you do it to your children, you'll remember when you see them. This is all done so that we remember. That's why it's being done, to remember. Remember what? That which we have observed and come to understand. Now, it doesn't do any good if you observe all of these important words and come to understand them if you can't remember them.
If it goes in one ear and right out the other, it's throwing you
right. Out. I get older now. That's not fair. Yeah. If you get older.
Yeah, but you know, one of the things that I have found, even though when I get older, is the more I use it, the more I repeat it, the more I share it, the more I read it, the more I translate it, the more I'm exposed to it, the more I, as a car.
Remember.
Yeah.
Right. And so, the last condition of the covenant is so you remember.
You remember that.
Yeah,
once again, for your own benefit.
Kirk, my guess is you and JB have stumbled across mul, the Hebrew word for...
JB is written with a book on it,
huh? Yeah. Yeah, in fact, JB, you did darn near write a book on mul. Can I ask you what
I'm done, it's going to be almost 300 pages.
Wow.
Yeah, on circumcision of mul. Can I ask you just a couple of quick questions, JB? Is it acceptable to Yahweh to participate in Pesach Passover if you are not mul, circumcised?
No.
So God says specifically that unless you are circumcised, you cannot participate in Passover. Is that correct?
Exact wording.
Okay. What is the purpose of Passover?
To rectify the consequence of sin.
Yeah,
save us from death.
No. That's mul. Mul is to rectify the is to perfect us. What is the purpose? Pesach only has one purpose.
Yeah. It makes us
the
immortal.
Life. It's the doorway to life. That is correct. It makes us immortal. Pesach opens the doorway to life in Yahweh's home. Pesach is the doorway to life. So.
And it's only open
according
for
to God,
those who are
mul. You cannot become immortal unless you observe Pesach and capitalize on Passover, and you cannot participate in Passover unless you are circumcised. So would you say circumcision is rather important?
Yeah.
So
I think the most damning line in all of Yahweh's word when it comes to circumcision is actually later in chapter 17. I'm sure we'll get to it, but he literally uses the word, any male who is not circumcised of the flesh, he has nullified and negated, rejected my covenant.
Destroyed it, yeah.
I don't think I want to nullify Yahweh's covenant. That doesn't sound like a good thing to me.
And that's Paul's
you've got two things here. One is God has only one family, and if you're not circumcised, then you're excluded from his family. If you're not circumcised, Yahweh makes it very clear you cannot participate in Passover, which means you cannot become immortal. Your soul is either going to die or it's going to be shipped off to Sheol. But there's a third statement about Mol that is incredibly blunt. It's found not in in the Torah, but in another one, through one of Yahweh's prophets. Doesn't Yahweh say that one of the great disappointments that he's had in his people is that they have taught this notion that you could be uncircumcised and enter heaven, and then Yahweh just puts down his foot and says, there are no uncircumcised males in heaven. There are none. Absolutely none. I forbid it. You cannot enter heaven uncircumcised. You cannot become immortal uncircumcised. You cannot be part of the covenant family uncircumcised, which means you can't be saved. Which means Paul was an abysmal liar, because he not only said, he not only based his entire arguments, his entire message was derived from the Gnostic idea that that which is of the flesh is evil, and therefore that which requires circumcision is evil. And the writing the antithesis of what God said, and if he said, if you are circumcised, then even his Christo, Christ, cannot save you. They are the opposite message. God is saying, without circumcision, there is no immortality. Without circumcision, there is no participation in his one and only covenant family. Without circumcision, you cannot enter heaven. Please,
are you side with Paul, or are you side with Yahweh?
Right. A complete and total repudiation of everything Paul wrote. Complete and total repudiation, therefore, the Christian New Testament.
Now, the scholars have to do this purposely, because even a cursory review of this, just a glance of looking up words, and you'd find all that true.
Now, I would ask you another question. Can I ask you a different way? If you are circumcised and you don't remember what Yahweh said because you didn't observe it, and therefore you do not understand it, are you going to become part of Yahweh's family and enter heaven? No.
Yeah.
So it will preclude you if you do not do these things. But circumcision, to have value to you, has to be done in the context of that Yahweh placed it in, which is, if you want to know the path to walk to me, then you need to observe what I am conveying. And you need to be discerning and make the necessary connections so as to understand me and be prudent regarding this relationship. And so it's only from a thoughtful connection that your offspring after you should be circumcised so that they can remember. It's set within that context. It's, once again, doing without understanding is worthless.
Mm-hmm.
Understanding without engaging and acting in accordance with God's instruction is worthless.
Just as worthless.
So being circumcised without being observant, carefully considering what Yahweh has shared with us about how we walk to him, come to understand who he is and what he is offering, it's only then that circumcision is a benefit.
But in your book on that, behind all of the steps.
That's right. All right. Yes. It's our second.
It's only after you've done the other five that that's even useful.
Right. The family of man is created because there's this outdoor plumbing that men have, that they engage with women to conceive children, that becomes the family of man. You're either going to be cut, set apart, divided from the family of man, or you're going to be estranged from God. If you're not divided, separated from the family of man, you cannot be set apart to Yahweh. That's why circumcision is the specific sign here that helps us remember the covenant. The means to conceive the family of man. And so Yahweh was saying, I want you to be different in this regard so that you remember. Powerful concept.
Mm-hmm.
Any other thoughts on Mola, Kirk or JB? Now that you've written 300 pages on Mola.
I could probably go on and on it. Like I said, I've done a lot into it, but no, I think as far as this is concerned, we've kind of hit all the major points on it. It's like I said, it's not. It's going, in and of itself, it does you no real good. But without it, you cannot achieve anything.
Yes.
Go ahead.
It's just simply, if you do not do it, you're precluded from immortality. You're precluded from being adopted into Yahweh's one and only covenant family. And you're precluded from entering heaven. And women... please understand that this instruction is to parents regarding their children. So it's what you do on behalf of your children that sets you apart in this regard. And
the one other thing I would add is, we talked about doing it for the right reason. Now, that doesn't mean that if you were circumcised as a child and your parents didn't know Yahweh, that you need to go get it done again.
Correct. By the way, JB, does Yahweh ever tell us who has to cut off the foreskin?
No.
Does he ever tell us how much foreskin has to be cut off?
Nope.
Does he tell us when we as parents should remove the foreskin from our sons?
Yes. The eighth day.
Yes, he does. On what day is that?
The eighth day.
Why did he choose eight?
Well, eight is one, six plus one plus another one. It's the number that represents infinity. But even beyond that, just looking at it from a purely physical standpoint, it happens to be the day when the single largest amount of platelets your body will ever have in proportion exist, and you are the most capable of clotting and surviving on that day, any other day in your life. As you get older, that ratio will never be that high again.
Right. Yeah, it's the day that your blood coagulates and heals so that a wound will, you will not bleed, will that cut will heal
before
the
that, the kid
readily.
Would bleed to death.
Right.
After that, it would even it goes down.
It'd be less
likely to bleed to death, but at that day, it is the most likely that you will have absolutely no issues from doing it.
Right. So Yahweh conceived us for this instruction and gave us the eighth day because we were conceived for that. But the eighth, he conceived humanity so that our blood would coagulate and therefore clot and heal a wound on this day, because eight is the symbol of eternity. How many? There's only one of Yahweh's seven Moed Mikre that has an eighth day, doesn't it? Which one is that?
The final one.
Right.
Teruah.
Why? Because he's saying, I want you to camp out with me eighth day forever.
All eternity.
Right. All eternity. What is the symbol of eternity even today? An eight who turned on
number eight turned on its side.
Yeah.
Yep.
Right. So, this is what Yahweh was conveying here, is that on the eighth day, I want you to understand, I want you to remember Zachar, that this is about living forever. But this is not a religious rite. I'm not telling you who's going to cut it off. It doesn't matter. Mom, dad, a doctor. Doesn't matter. Doesn't matter who cuts it off. The timing is important. And he doesn't ever say, you know, it's got to be this much, this deep, this anything.
A quarter of an inch.
And he doesn't say that. Why? Because it's not about the act. It's about understanding what it represents. Now, make no mistake. There are very few things where Yahweh will say that this is about both in the flesh and in the spirit. That this is about the spiritual implications of this did in the flesh. And he says that over and over again about circumcision, doesn't it? In fact, even that entry to heaven, unless they are circumcised of the flesh and of the spirit, they ain't not in there.
And of the spirit.
Yeah.
So there's a reason that I've dedicated so much time to researching this subject. It is a very rare phenomenon where it is a physical thing that Yahweh is, and I don't want to use the term demanding because it's not really a demand, but requiring. There are very little physical things Yahweh requires of us. This is one. And that's why it intrigued me and why I've dedicated so much time to it.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah. It's absolutely true. And every nuance associated with mul as a means to zakar, remember, is stunningly important. It leads to RBN, understanding. So, you know, once again, we're dealing with something that is profoundly important. And it's not just profoundly important because it locks the door, if it's not done, to eternal life, forbids eternal life, no participation. It forbids entry into Yahweh's family. And thus you can never be with him. And it forbids entry into his home. And it forbids entry into heaven.
You know, I've heard someone argue before that, you know, well, if circumcision is that important, how come it's only mentioned in regards of Passover? You know, it doesn't say you have to be circumcised to participate in Matzah. It doesn't say you have to be circumcised to participate in any of the Mikra. But think about it. You know, if you don't benefit from Matzah, what good are the other Mikra to you?
No. You mean when you say, well, good, if you don't participate in Pesach, what good is the other
Pesach? Sorry, I misspoke. Yeah.
Yes.
But
again, right.
If you don't participate in Pesach, what good is
being perfected and mortal? What good is that?
Yeah. Oh, great.
You know,
about 10 years of goodness, good joyousness, then you're gone. Without Pesach, the other Mikra aren't really great benefits.
Right. And the first step is Pesach. If you don't take the first step through the door that is Pesach, you can't even go through the other ones. There's no.
Well, if you think about it like this,
that's the first step.
If you had a relationship with Yahweh, you were perfected.
Right.
Think about it. If you were
perfected after walking
and adopted into Yahweh's family, but you're immortal, how much are you going to enjoy the next 20, 30 years knowing that when you die, you're dead? How would you enjoy that? You couldn't. Without Pesach, none of the other Mikra are a benefit to you.
Right.
There's a reason that that's the first one, and that's the only one he mentioned.
And by the way, let's just say that you became immortal, but you're estranged from, kept out of Yahweh's
covenant
family.
That's the worst of everything.
Yeah, that's what Sheol is all about. That's if you want to find Paul, if you like Paul, you'll find him in hell. That's Sheol.
Yeah, there's two ways to become immortal. To leave your soul with Yahweh and be part of his family, or to leave your soul with HaSatan and be part of his family.
That's correct.
One's good, one ain't.
Well, that's correct.
Being immortal ain't necessarily a good thing.
Correct. Now, there'd be a lot of people who say, oh, you know, I can't believe that God would make that kind of a judgment. Well, it doesn't matter what you believe. This is what he said. It is black and white, man. If you don't like it, pick up an argument with him. It ain't going to do you any good. It's his home. This is what he said. And the fact of the matter is that if you pay attention to what he said, you're going to understand why. And I don't find Abraham arguing with them and saying, no, I want a different plan. I don't like that plan. I don't find Nowak arguing with them and saying, no, I want to have a different design for this boat, and I don't really want to build it. I want it to be a free gift. I don't see that here.
Yeah.
I see Abraham listening to what Yahweh said and acting upon it, and that's why he received these benefits. And he most certainly didn't negate it, as does Pauline Christianity. So I'm telling you, folks, if you're a Christian, you are screwed, blued, and tattooed.
Yeah.
And it's your own damn fault.
Yeah.
You have no excuse.
I mean, yeah. Especially in today's day and age, you know, in the dark ages, and you know, you couldn't read and you didn't have access to it. Okay, those people had an excuse. That's, you know, that's not here or there. Today's day and age, it is so readily available. If you are going to church and spending 4 hours a week at a church ceremony listening to some pastor tell you what to think, you have no one to blame but yourself for your fate.
That's correct. Do you think that the Roman Catholic Church has, as part of its basis for salvation, circumcision?
Nope.
No. No. Ain't there a thing? They're not speaking for God. They can't be God's spokesperson on earth because they don't include it. Do they include walking away from religion, which is the first condition of the covenant?
No.
Do they have walk to Yahweh to become perfect? And the only path to Yahweh is the one we're talking about, begins with Pesach, Matzah, and Bikurim. Do they have that?
No.
Nope.
Nope.
Do they have trust and rely on Yahweh?
Nope.
Nope. Do they have closely examine and carefully consider, observe the terms and conditions of the covenant?
Nope.
Other than observe and understand so that you can remember, circumcise your sons. You're not sons, circumcise the male so that we all remember, you remember, they remember, is the fifth, and they don't mention it either. They're 0 for 5.
But by the same token, you have rabbinical Judaism who does recognize the need for circumcision but completely ignores the rest of it. And they're just
that
as
well. Correct. Correct. That is correct. All the previous four, they ignore completely. And all of this, God, not once did he say, I want you to make large donations and that will count towards you being saved, does he? He never said, get down on your knees and pray to me. That wasn't one of the conditions either, was it? He didn't say, be religious. Nope. He didn't say, worship me, did he? It's one of the conditions. He didn't say, if you're good, then I'll save you. No. Good's not mentioned. Good deeds aren't mentioned. Donations aren't mentioned. Prayer is not mentioned. Fear of God's not
charity.
Mentioned. Worship's not mentioned. Charity is not mentioned. Religion's not mentioned. In fact, religion is only mentioned in the sense of walking away from it.
Negative, yeah.
Five conditions and none of the religion. Does he say, believe in Jesus Christ is one of the conditions? No.
He couldn't. There's no Jake.
Well, of course. But he didn't even say believe in Yosha, does he?
No.
He didn't get his name right. Does he speak of the power of the cross? No. Five conditions.
Power in the blood.
Yeah. Five conditions. There are only five. And was grace one of them?
No.
No. Was faith one of them? No.
No, sir.
No. Doesn't speak of any of those things. Not faith, not prayer, not worship, not Easter, not Christmas, not Sunday worship, not church. Nothing.
Yeah.
Is one
no communion.
Everlasting.
No holy water.
No
transubstantiation.
No baptism.
Yeah.
No. There are five terms and conditions. And they are to walk away from religion and politics and the family of man. Walk away from Babel, which is the basis of Bible and Christianity. Walk away from them. To trust and rely on Yahweh. To trust and rely on him, you have to know what he said. You have to understand what he's conveying. Otherwise, you can't trust and rely. Number three, walk to him and become perfect. There's only one path to him. It begins with this the doorway to life called Pesach, that means to perfect one's soul and to pull all religion and politics away from it and the corruption of those things on Matzah, leading to being adopted into his family, on Bukurim, being a born child into his family, which is all about what the covenant Berith is presenting, so that we then celebrate seven sevens later, Shavuah, which is the promise, the oath of seven, where we are enriched and empowered, enlightened. Those are the steps that Yahweh is providing the benefits of the covenant. And ongoing, we become his troubadours. We shout out a warning to those who are religious, political, and patriotic, those who aren't paying attention to what Yahweh said. And we encourage them to listen to his message, which is why we're all choders out there on that branch that is that Dod has become such a powerful and important messenger. We're all off that Dod's branch as choders, as and stems on
all
that branch.
All the old swigs sticking off of it.
Yeah, you're right. Holding up our neck, our sign, the message that Yahweh is using to call his people home, so that he can kaporum, reconcile his relationship with his family. And then everyone can sukkah, who listens to him, who acts upon what he is offering, can camp out with him in his home forever. That's the message. And the only way you're going to know that message is to pay attention to the fourth term of the condition of the covenant, which we have shared today, which is to closely examine and carefully consider the terms and conditions of his covenant, so that you understand who Yahweh is and what he's offering with regard to this relationship. And the fifth, so that we might remember, if we are observant and judgmental, so as to understand the whole concept of what circumcision mule represents. Cut off and remove the foreskin, warding off a deadly and debilitating curse by way of this oath that we are making, changing priorities while making a binding promise to undergo the benefits of circumcision. And this is I want to repeat it because I think it's so important. It was written in the Niphil stem. The Niphil stem means that not only is this a genuine relationship being stressed here, but the benefit is accrued to the parent. You know, it's so often I've heard, okay, so men are to be circumcised. What about women? Well, the benefit of circumcision is ascribed to the parent.
Yeah.
That's your answer. You get the benefit of circumcision.
You benefited from it as a parent because you chose to do it. Circumcising a child, that's completely against their will. They don't have a will at that point.
They don't have a will at that
point. It does them no good because you can circumcise them, and they can still grow up to be as religious as the most devout Muslim. And it does them no good, but it does you good because you did it. You made the choice. You have that constant reminder of your responsibility.
So the benefit is being prescribed to the parent. And then it's in the infinitive absolute, which intensifies the importance of this act and the imperfect conjugation, which reveals that this instruction on circumcision will endure uninterrupted throughout time with ongoing benefits. Man, that's powerful.
That's, I guess.
I'm inspired by these words. And I've read these words hundreds upon hundreds of times. And each time I read them, I'm inspired more by them. Kirk, I think the same thing as you. And JB, this is your wheelhouse. This is your favorite of all topics.
Yes.
You know, you may be, in fact,
my favorite,
without
question, I've dedicated the most amount of time.
Yeah, I think it can be safely said that you are the world's foremost expert on Yahweh's position on circumcision.
You're here.
I'm working on that.
Which
I want to know it as much as I can and understand it as much as I can so I can help others.
Which makes you the perfect antidote for the greatest plague of death ever perpetrated on humankind, Pauline Christianity. Because this is the fulcrum of Pauline Christianity.
Yeah. Like I said, that was part of the reason I grew so much interest in it. Is, you know, when you were going through questioning Paul, I was very much, you know, if you remember, you know, emailing you playing devil's advocate, trying to justify everything Paul was saying. And it was when we came to circumcision and Paul's view on that. And I just so happened to translate this exact same verse as I was reading through Paul's view. And I just like, there's no, I give up at that point. Like, there's no more justifying him. I can twist Paul to make him fit everything until I came to this. And I was like, yep, there's no doubt about it. This is, he's done.
And by the way, this is where Paul begins. This is where Paul in Christianity begins. Over circumcision. Read the book of Acts. Read the book of Acts and think about why Paul was called into Jerusalem. It was over circumcision, and he was opposed to it. You know, for me, it was the statement where Paul wrote that the covenant that is memorialized on Sinai, which is the Torah's covenant, was with Hagar and its slaves. And when Paul wrote that, I just said, that's it for me. I'm out of here. That is the antithesis of what's true, and it's going to form the basis of his ongoing testimony. And so I'm going to repudiate everything this man wrote because it's revolting, it's disgusting, it's the antithesis of what God said. He is the most hideous and deadly liar of all time. And I am absolutely certain, I'm certain that when God ranks those people he despises the most in all of human history, first and foremost is the man born as Sheol, as Shaul, the founder of the Christian religion. Second to him would be Muhammad, because the religion he conceived with Satan to attack and murder Yahweh's chosen people. And third would be Rabbi Akiba for having led so many of his children astray by conceiving what is today rabbinical Judaism. Those are the most hated three. I put Hadrian next on that list because of what he did in Jerusalem and on Mount Moriah, building a temple to himself and to Jupiter, and then enticing the Jews back with a lie and then murdering them in mass, destroying the land, salting it. I think that representing all things that are Rome and that became Roman Catholicism, I think Hadrian is probably fourth on that list.
The thing is, what all of them have in common is that the vast blunt of their onslaught was felt by Yahweh's people. I don't think Yahweh cares too much about Gentiles who kill Gentiles. I don't think he has a whole lot of interest, but when it involves his people, that's when he steps in. When it's either people hurting his people or his people doing the wrong thing, he gets upset.
Or on the positive side, on when someone helps his people. You know, the reason we are stems, choters, that have created a neck sign that Yahweh is lifting up on behalf of his people is because what we are conveying, what we are learning from being inspired by the words that he has already conveyed through Yisrael and Yehuda, we are sharing with Yisrael and Yehuda. And so it has an influence on his people, which is why God cares about it. That's why he's involved in it. That's why he's sponsoring it and lifting it up. And the moment
we choose that, we become just as the natural born.
Correct.
We become his children because we are helping his children.
Yeah. You know, when I first started this, I began immediately with the perspective that let's study Yahweh's instructions for the benefit of his people, Israel and Yehuda. That will be the primary focus. If Goyim benefit along the way, wonderful. But they are not the target audience. And come to find out 15 years later, that indeed is the right approach. Yahweh conveyed his prophetic testimony through Yisrael and Yehuda. Period. End of story. That testimony can benefit Yisrael and Yehuda as well as every goy that listens to it.
Mm-hmm.
And we as goy can study what Yahweh inspired and conveyed through Yehuda and Yisrael
and
be adopted. And we can share it for the benefit of those Yisraelites and Yahudim that have turned a blind eye to it. So that maybe, listening to this, they change their mind. They change their perspective. They open their minds. They open their hearts to what Yahweh had to say to them. They come to trust and rely upon him. They reject their religion. They walk to him and become perfect along the provided through his liberation of them from Mitzrayim, the crucibles of human oppression. And they do this by closely examining, carefully considering the words that we're sharing. All to promote understanding so that we remember. That's the story. That's the audience. That's the intent. The cause and the result. Truly, it's all that God cares about. Mm-hmm. Everything else that he will say and do simply direct our attention back to the prime objective. And this is the prime objective.
Agreed. Okay.
Well, gentlemen, it is a pleasure. I'm delighted. We played right into JB's wheelhouse here. This is always good. And it's good, JB, to be, you ought to take some pride, sense of satisfaction at truly being the world's foremost expert on a subject near and dear to Yahweh. A subject like
that was kind of my goal. I wanted to put out an article, that was, I would say the definitive work on it.
Right.
I was going to cover every single verse related to it. Everything Yahweh or anyone in the Torah, prophets, and writings had to say. That's the goal.
Yep.
What's been great about it is how much I've learned in addition beyond
right.
that, just because,
of course,
nothing ever includes just one lesson, so
correct.
That's part of the reason it's grown to be as large as it has, is,
right.
I'm commenting
with all the stuff
you
learn along the way.
Now, I can.
I think that's why you stopped long ago and changed your approach so that it mirrors the one that I ended up adopting, which is
I found it impossible to translate
without commenting.
Right.
Because the whole purpose of translating and amplifying these words is to know so that we can make the connections to understand. And when you understand, the motivation to share what you have come to understand is so overwhelming, you find that you can't translate without sharing.
Well, plus I found that I'll translate the passage, and then I'll go back to write the commentary, but I'm revising my translation as I'm writing the commentary, because as I'm trying to explain it, I come to understand it better than when I was just trying to translate it. And so, a verse that I may be, a passage I may be stuck on when translating, I'm like, I don't get this, but I'm just going to literally translate it as best as I can and worry about it later. I'll come back to, and after having commented on everything that came before it, I'll reach it and be like, oh, duh. It stands out to me. Now I understand it. So I'll change my entire translation based upon what I learned from commenting on it. And I think that's really helped me. I've kept a couple of laws where I have my translation before and my translation after, and just how different they can be. I learned more by trying to explain it than I did just trying to translate it.
I think my translations
benefit from that.
I can't
do it without doing this anymore. And
I
can't do anything out of context. I had a couple passages where, I would only translate the, two or three verses that related to the word. And then, I've started doing it now where, I went back literally for Jeremiah. I went through the 16th verse of chapter 8 through the 10th verse of chapter 10 just because of something that was in chapter 9, verse 24. Because that's where the story began and ended. And you can't comment on this without the context of everything that came before it and the context of everything that comes after it.
Correct. And it's, you know, context is the mother's milk of understanding. You know, first of all, you need to review everything in context. You take it out of context, you're almost always going to either shortchange your understanding or you're going to come to an erroneous conclusion because you don't have the context. And so context is essential. And accurately rendering and understanding each of the components that comprise these words is essential. So you've got to have accurate information in context, and then it only has merit if you take the next step, which is to make the necessary connections, to closely examine and carefully consider in a judgmental, discerning fashion so that you comprehend what is being said, so that you derive the intended insights. You conceive and perceive the proper conclusions. That's the purpose of it. And then once you know and you understand in context of what Yahweh is sharing with us, and you have accurate information, you're in position to make the right decision. And that's all you need to do. Once you're empowered to make the right choice, to do the right thing for the right reasons, then you're immortal. You're perfected. You're adopted into Yahweh's family. You're enriched. You're empowered. You become one of his spokespeople here on earth, helping him to reconcile his relationship with the children and get to camp out with him forever.
But that's probably the greatest thing is once you reach that point, you don't want to stop.
Correct.
And so it's not like this just like, oh, great, I'm here. I'm done. You want to do more. You want to go deeper and deeper and learn more and get more into it. And that's what makes it so fun is it's never ending.
Never ending. No, and it's not just never ending. The more you translate, the more you examine, the more you make the kind of connections that lead to understanding, you can go right over the exact same material. For example, today, I had never realized that the help that Chawa was providing was to help Adam appreciate the whole concept of family and of covenant.
Yeah.
Of raising children, and so to understand Yahweh's perspective and what he was trying to accomplish. Never done that here. So that's one of the advantages of doing this. Now, that may not mean a lot to anybody else, but it meant something to me.
That's awesome.
I think it's pretty cool.
Yeah.
I took your note down.
You have to rewrite now. Right, and then to have JB say, okay, here are the big three on circumcision. No eternal life, no participation in God's one and only family, and no entry into heaven. that's a key. I don't want any one of those three. So, all right, fellas. Wonderful evening.
Enjoyed it. Thank you, JB.
Did we get through passage? I don't know if we got through one or two.
I think we got through about half of a verse.
Yeah. I feel great satisfaction when we can spend an hour and a half on a statement. Then I know we are really learning, we're clicking, we're being observant, we're closely examining, we are shamaring, if you will, to emphasize the Hebrew verb shamar. We're doing that, and we're coming to begin, understand, when we're focused. When we can talk for an hour and a half on one statement, then it's good. Then it's really, really good.
And I still feel like an idea of
how in-depth Yahweh's word goes.
Yeah.
And it's not even just one statement. It's a statement we've all looked at and went over several times before.
Correct.
It's not like this is our first time to look at it even. But we can still find so much in there to talk about.
Right. Yeah. And, you know, guys, I would say, now, of course, we're being recorded, but we're not broadcasting at this point. Although the people that are called in to listen are still able to listen. If it was just me talking to me, this would be worth doing. if it's the three of us talking together and no one else was listening, I can't imagine a better way to spend my my Friday evening. And if it's just the people who have called in,
just conversations between me and my wife.
Yeah, it would be worth it.
Night.
And if it were for all of those people who listened at the archives, which is about 100 to 1 more people listen to these programs on the archives than listen live, it would be worth it. But, of course, it's mostly worth it because this is doing something the creator of the universe wants done. The time has come for his people's eyes to be open, their ears to listen, their minds to open, so that they might hear a message that he revealed to them so long ago and come back home. And for that, this is worthwhile. All right, gentlemen. My
thank
pleasure.
You so much.
Yeah, we are really in a good spot. Doing a good thing for the right reason.
So.
Yes.
Hi.
Good night, guys.
Hi, y'all.
Okay.
Have a good night. Talk to you. Good night.
Bye-bye. Good night.
Shalom.